Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with me, friends. We're going to talk about what an open source Microsoft web framework looks like. Some of you all may have come to the ASP.NET overview talk. This is not that talk. What this talk is intending to do is be a bunch of context and a parade of demos. I like parades of demos. I hope you do too, right? That gives you an idea of what one could potentially accomplish were it all open source. You know, when I came to Microsoft, people like Phil Hack and Scott Hunter and Mads and all the different people, Glenn Block, and all the people who worked really hard to open source .NET, you would think that it happened overnight. You know, we get on Hacker News every couple of days with stuff where people think it is April Fool's. You know, what crazy thing is Microsoft open source today? But this has been 10 years plus in the making. You know, you need legal frameworks to set these kinds of things up. You need foundations, and you need LCA, legal and corporate affairs, to be on point with you. You need things like GitHub to exist. You need things like Git to exist. You know, I don't think that we could have open sourced everything 10 years ago if we didn't have social coding. So I'll give you a little bit of context, and I'll show you some of the cool stuff that you could potentially build. And actually thinking about, I don't know if I have the right Visual Studio on this particular machine. Why? I have four machines here, and none of them are set up to show what I want to show. I need a laptop that has not got Visual Studio on it at a developer conference. Anyone? What is this laptop? If you don't have Visual Studio, what kind of developer are you? You're like a SharePoint person or something? Oh, he's a SharePoint person. Just kidding, I love SharePoint people. What is this thing? Why did you give me this? You might need it? What kind of freaky laptop? What is going on here? Is there anything on this laptop I should not see? Okay, I just broke that thing that just... All right. I'm going to use this. Where's the thingy? VGA, classy. Can we bring up the VGA thing? Sir? Guy in the back. It is not working. It says duplicate here, so that means it is working. Pressure's on, though. I'm going to wiggle it. Plugging it in again. It's like Super Nintendo. Oh, it blinked, and I let go. Anything? Well, that somehow makes this demo less impressive. Do you have a tiny, crazy HDMI connector thing? It's going to be worth it. So I'm a little concerned that you are searching Cortana for Disney wait times. He hands me this thing, and he's literally not engaged in my talk. But there is a pie chart that Cortana has designed for him that shows average wait time sort of descending. And what is that? No, this thingy. It's like not USB, but it makes you think it is? Micro HDMI. Do you have that? How about micro to not, anything but VGA? Does it have DisplayPort? It has, it blinked again. See, it is outputting.
I have this cable on that side.
You have that cable? What kind of cable is that? I think that's the network port. This is not going the way I thought it was going to go. So I have Visual Studio on a USB key. I figure I'll start installing it now. By the time he gets back, we will have just got it started. Are you coming back? I think he left. This is crap right here. And now is when we'll start. No, just kidding. So what I've got here is a copy of the next version of Visual Studio on a USB dealie, because typically when you install Visual Studio, you know, if you go to a hackathon, I do a lot of hackathons at times, and you know, you get a bunch of kids in the room together, and you're like, hey kids, let's all learn Visual Studio, yay! Let's all download a 2 gig ISO file and then mount it, and then give our entire, you know, all of our details to Microsoft, who will then sell them to, I don't think, this isn't anything, man. This plugs into nothing, literally nothing. I plugged it into the network port. I don't hope that doesn't matter. Ah, the network cable totally worked. I did not. I plugged it. Seriously, it's marked network. No one wants to download a 2 gig ISO. I actually recently thought Node was the answer. I thought, I'll teach my 8-year-old Node. So we made a Node Hello World app, and he ran away while NPM was restoring packages. True story. He literally, like, ran away from home. So here's Visual Studio Preview. I'm just going to go ahead and hit install. And that's blink. The der blinking lights is going here. It's going off of this thing. To be clear, sir, this is, you have no Visual Studio on this machine. You've also have done nothing to your start menu, which I respect. Disney World wait times. Could have looked him up by now. Pretty sure I should not have to do any of that. Show average Disney World wait. Well, that's not what I wanted. How did you do that? Kind of like a sorcery. Show average Disney World wait times. It's awesome, dude. Bots are amazing. It totally sucks. No idea what you're doing. How old is Hugh Jackman? Of course, but you know how to do that. That's fantastic, yeah. That result, of course, designed to make me feel bad about myself, because that is a good-looking man for 47 years old. I am not very well preserved. So we've been installing Visual Studio 15 about as long as it takes Cortana to get that information, which is about a minute. And of course, when you get to 100% on the progress bar, there's an hour beyond that of, it says it's done. Now, this part takes another hour, and there's an hour here. This actually takes longer than the install. And it's always the 12th time that you see this that you think, oh, it's done. So that is real. That's not a joke, like, for real. So that is Visual Studio 15. Microsoft, so clever with your naming. Visual Studio 15 is not 2015. That would make too much sense. You're running Visual Studio 2015, which is actually Visual Studio 14. Yeah, and there was no 13 because bad luck. Cool, so you have a copy of that. You should probably burn that machine because that's all NDA. All right, thanks. Oh, did I give you that crappy thing that you, here, this is garbage. Here, take that away. Thank you, sir. Cool, so that kind of worked. And look at all the thingies we need to make. Know where that came from. And there's like a double, I don't know what that is. Oh, that's what that's for. Okay, cool. All right, let me plug it back in here. So things are getting better, and I think that's pretty exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing the next version of Visual Studio. Because when you sit down with the kids, you're going to want to have them have a good version of Visual Studio that's running very, very quickly. That'll be a full enterprise version of Visual Studio in some number of minutes. Let's say less than 5 or 10 minutes, complete install. But you also want to have things like Visual Studio Code, because I don't think a 15-year-old has the patience to do things otherwise. Speaking of 15-year-olds, someone wanted my business card. I did not have my business card, but I found my business card when I was 15. I think it was particularly clever that I put after 3:30, because that's when I got out of school. And later versions of this business card, if you have early versions, showed the time that my BBS turned on at 10 o'clock. So you could dial in to my parents' house, and you have to dial and then hang up and then dial back, and then the BBS would turn on, you could play Trade Wars. So that worked out pretty well. And I drew that picture of Moon Knight. That was my fallback career. So I've been working in .NET since 2002, and I was doing open source in 2002, and I worked on a really great blogging engine called Das Blog, which is German for the blog, and worked on that with Clemens Vasters and Omar Shaheen and some folks, and my blog still runs Das Blog in 2016, and it was in fact .NET 2 until earlier last year. And people tease me about that. They say, why haven't you updated your blog to the new fancy, you know, .NET foo? Because it works just fine. My blog is rarely down. It survives regular slashdottings and hacker newsings and redditings. It doesn't typically take a tip over unless we've open sourced something big that day. It worked just fine on .NET 2. So I say that to you as a honest living reminder that if you don't want to upgrade an application, then don't. .NET's not going anywhere, it's fine. There are a lot of really great applications that run .NET 2, that run .NET 4, and you can continue to run those apps, they're fine. And if you want to have the new latest stuff, you can use .NET 4.6, which has just come out and it's great. But don't feel in any way that you're going to be left behind if you decide to, you know, stick on older versions of .NET. And also remember that Visual Studio 2015 supports .NET 2 just fine. I opened up my .NET 2 application and worked on DOS Blog recently when I upgraded it to .NET 4. Was not a big deal. So you're not being left behind. Now, one of the things that is happening, though, that I think people will get left behind on is open source, because I think that it is evolving everywhere, not just at Microsoft. I often talk to CEOs, CXOs, CTOs of businesses that don't really think open source is a thing yet, and they'll have that conversation. Do you really think this is the time for us to think about open source and what that means to us as a company? I don't really like open source. I don't think it's really going to, this isn't the right time. And if you convince yourself that this is fine, this is okay, you will probably die. Right, because this avalanche is coming down on top of you, like the giant Indiana Jones rock is rolling down the hill, and that is open source. And it's too late for the pebbles to vote about this avalanche that's coming. I don't really think this is a good idea. I'm not really feeling comfortable with this. Open source is happening, and Microsoft has woken up, and I would encourage your companies to think about it as well. What's your strategy? What are the licenses that you're okay with? Do you want your employees to do open source? If they do open source, what's your rule, right? Who owns the thing, right? You'll have happier customers, you'll have happier employees if you let them do open source. Here is an article about the open sourcing of .NET. Notice the date, 2001. This is the third time we've done this. Do you know that we open sourced .NET before 15 years ago? Yeah, does anyone remember that? It was called Rotor, R-O-T-O-R. It was a shared source version of .NET. Right when .NET came out in 2000, we open sourced it, except it wasn't really open source. Remember what I talked about at the beginning, maturity and the level of maturity that was required? The open source community needed to mature, licenses need to exist, legal frameworks. In this case here, we went and called it the shared source license, which was cool for the time, but totally lame. Because it said, hey, we're open sourcing .NET, don't touch, just look. Just see, look, .NET, just look gently, don't hurt it. And, and the jitter, yeah, we're not gonna give you the jitter. Garbage collector, no, we're gonna put a naive implementation of that in here. We're gonna basically neuter that and we'll leave that as an exercise to the reader. So they basically gave us the open source, like the libraries, read-only with lame versions of the stuff that was cool. And that was for educational purposes. It was a start, but that's not cool, right? So then, of course, 15 years later, you get snarky comments from people like the Register that say things like, oh, but it'll be different this time, honest. Which I think is really rude, right? Because it is different this time, and I think it is being proven to be different this time over and over and over again, right? We came out with the reference license, the MSPL or the MSPRL, but then we realized that that's silly too. Microsoft doesn't need their own license. We're not some unique snowflake that needs its own open source license. So we've been going with things like MIT and Apache. And a useful thing to remember, did you know that you can go to sourceof.net? Did you know about this? Sourceof.net. And that will take you here. And that's the source code for .NET. Check this out. You can go and find some, you know, like your favorite parts of the .NET framework that you like to read in your spare time. I'm a big fan of simple file-based log. You can actually click on a line number and then share that with people inside the company, right? So you could say, hey, you know, I'm pretty sure it works like this. Hey, source of .NET. It actually does not work like that at all. It works like this because there's the source code. And it's up there. And this is not just a browser, but you can actually click on individual pieces. So like if you're clicking here on file exists, that's a link. So now I'm looking at the source code for file. Who knew that this existed already? Very few people. See, what I tried to do after totally biffing that demo earlier, thank you, VGA guy, is to give you something useful so that at least if the rest of this talk sucks, and I know some of you are looking at your watches, you can say, well, Hanselman, but the source of .NET, that was useful. Because you're sitting here for an hour, you can't go anywhere, people are next to you, but at least you have source of .NET. So I try to give you as much useful stuff to bookmark as possible. Okay? So let's think about what this looks like. What is the health of .NET open source right now? Well, this is this cool chart that shows you the compiler, which is Roslyn, CoreFX and the Core CLR, and then MVC, Entity Framework, and then the .NET Execution Environment, which is now the .NET CLI. Notice how those six projects are all growing very well, but three of them have clustered together and are very much going kind of up and to the right, while the other ones are not quite growing as fast. Why do you think that is? Why would one be so popular and one not so much? Any thoughts? Want to call it out? It's always good to call it out in a group of 1,000 people. Just be the one that yells out, I don't know. Totally fine to not know. Shane, what do you think? You missed a question. He was tweeting, and that's okay. Were you tweeting him? Because he's looking to maybe meet up later and go on some rides. No? Tweeting about wait times. So I think that Roslyn, the CoreFX, and the CoreCLR are really cool computer science-y academic things, right? This is the opportunity to blaze a new trail, to get this stuff running on systems that we've never had running before, right? Somewhere out there, I'm sure that there's like a 15-year-old girl in Norway who's trying to get this running on like a PlayStation 2. And it's going to be on Hacker News like that. And they're going to say, why'd you do it? Why'd you get .NET running on a PlayStation 2? She'll be like, because of the internet. And that's awesome. And that's what's cool about open source, right? Simply because you know, it can be done. That's already having innovation in this space. We've seen people get it on FreeBSD. We've seen people getting this thing running on small devices, big devices, on systems that we weren't even planning for. While we were off thinking about getting it running on a Mac, someone gave us a pull request that got it running on a Mac. So I think that the computer science-y low-level stuff like compilers has got people excited about what they could potentially do with this. That's where the innovation's happening. Things like MVC and Entity Framework, it's a little bit more like, you know, string concatenation. That's really what a web framework is. It's just ways to concatenate angle brackets together. And it's somehow less exciting than getting it running on a PlayStation. But I appreciate that she's trying to do that. So we talked a little bit about this in the ASP.NET talk, and I'll go over it just very, very briefly. The idea that ASP.NET Core core 1 is going to sit on top of the .NET Framework 4.6, which runs on Windows, and the .NET Core 1.0 framework, which runs on Mac, Linux, and Windows. Core spans both of those things, okay? Now, we need to make sure that we don't add anything to .NET Core 1.0 that's going to prevent it from working on any framework. So there are things that you'll be able to do on the full framework that you can't do on .NET Core 1.0. Right, so if you want to like access the registry, that's going to be something that would be a platform-specific shim. That's not going to be built in. We're not going to have registry APIs in .NET Core. One of the challenges that we always talk about is, you know, system.drawing, going and doing things like opening JPEGs or resizing them. We don't yet have a cross-platform answer for that. There's two different solutions that you can work on for that. But that would be an example where on the Windows side, we would call GDI, the graphics device stuff that's built into Windows, or we'd call DirectX or something like that. Those aren't available everywhere, therefore we don't have them yet. So we're working on solving those kind of problems. It's important to note, though, that ASP.NET Core runs happily on both of those, and you get all of the new stuff that's going on around the open source Roslyn compilers, the jitter, and all that good stuff that's happening at the lower level. And as I said before, if you don't want to run on Linux and Mac, that's cool. Don't have to do it. You can totally run your ASP.NET Core apps on top of Framework. And there's still going to be cool stuff happening in .NET Framework. The next version is already being planned out. And they're coming up with things to make WebForms developers happier, like we added recently being able to have Roslyn ASPX pages, C# 7 support in WebForms, things like that. So that continues to march forward. All right, let's get into some more demos, because that's not as exciting as demos are. Blah, blah, blah. This is all, oh, there you go. Let me delete that. I don't know where that came from. Okay, so I apologize for any non-meat eaters for this analogy. I eat meat, I'm sorry. And I live in Portland, which is unusual to eat meat in Portland. But we were thinking about people who are not excited about the daily build aspects of ASP.NET, and they felt that that was just too rare, right? It's just too raw. They think that it's chaos over at Microsoft. It was a very reliable, stable thing. Every 18 months, a new version of Visual Studio comes out, and that's what our enterprise upgraded to. You guys are freaking out over there. We just got on .NET 4. Why are you doing this to us? That's just the general kind of gnashing of teeth that happens. So if you want your steak well done, that's cool. Stop paying attention. Seriously, don't watch the community stand-up. Don't look at the daily check-in mails. Don't worry about continuous integration builds. Don't worry about us developing in public. Why are we developing in public? Why are we doing open source? Because you have asked us to. You told us to do this. We are giving you exactly what you asked for. Would you agree? You wanted more transparency, totally open source, run on Linux. Like, people forget that. We're doing exactly what you asked for. Too much. Ah, Microsoft. And you can turn your Xbox into a developer Xbox with, like, an app now. I mean, like, oh, it's a dev Xbox. Oh, you suck, Microsoft. It takes 5 minutes to do that. I just installed Visual Studio in 3 minutes. And a little later on, I'm sure VGA guy is going to be like, it's slow with 100 projects open. Microsoft. Ballmer was involved somehow in this decision. If you don't like seeing us do this in the open, stop paying attention. Have a well-done steak. With all due respect to my lovely wife, she likes her steak well done. And by well done, I mean gray. And I think that's just a waste of meat. It really is, because it's disrespectful to the animal. I mean that sincerely. She's like, I don't want salmonella. And I just go to Chipotle and I just do what I'm gonna do. Because if you don't want to get sick, go to Chipotle, because lightning never strikes twice in the same place. It's the safest place to be right now is at Chipotle. So that's why I'm there every day. If you like it well done, get Visual Studio. Use things from NuGet. Don't use Dash pre-release, right? But if you like things medium well, you want a little risk in your life, you can do some of our betas. You can do our technology previews. That's medium well. That's nothing wrong with that. Now you can start moving a little bit towards the pinker meats, and you can go and get a CI drop, right, a continuous integration drop. I've got a version of the release candidate 2 on my machine that we talked about today in the community stand-up. I'll talk about that in a minute. That is a CI drop. And all of the packages are not at NuGet, but they are either at MyGet, which is our own private NuGet feed. MyGet is a really great feature. If your enterprise or your small business needs a NuGet private server, you can go to MyGet, you can get one. It's pretty cool. Also, Visual Studio Team Services has NuGet in the cloud, your own NuGet server for you. So people don't know about that stuff. Tell somebody. Medium rare is some risk of death. Build from the source, maybe. Switch to the dev branch. Or rare. Feature branches, right? I want a branch of this with a specific feature that I'm working on. Now, in the past, we have been afraid of .NET. Like, let's just be real about this. Because .NET 4.5 comes out, and you go and install 4.5, and you have your expense reporting app on it, and it works just fine. It's rock solid, 4.5, you're a fan, right? 4.6 comes out, C# 7, she wants to use all those new features and this new stuff, and you know, she's 4.6, 4.61, 4.62, she's on the cutting edge. She wants to use the new hotness, and she's happy that the company allows her to do that. That's why she works at the company. Now it's time to install her app on the shared server that everyone uses, and he says, whoa, you're gonna destabilize my expense reporting application. You can't do that. So then she quits. She goes to work at GitHub or something because they're doing the new hotness. And then fast forward a couple of, I don't know, 30 years. It's .NET 99. You're still on 4.5 because you're afraid, and that's okay. And she's president of GitHub. You see how this, it just goes badly for everybody. The point is that exciting new features on an application basis, she should be able to innovate and do that, right? But you've got an app that works just fine. My blog runs .NET 2, totally cool. I don't want to install anything that's going to destabilize it. We say that these are highly compatible releases. They are. Minor releases are extremely highly compatible. But there's always some little switch or some little edge case or some little thing that might get you. So what it is that's keeping you from installing the new stuff is fear. I don't really want to do the testing. I don't want to go and regress this. What if it's something obscure? It gets you thinking about this. .NET Core promises to be totally separate. This means that you can have your own private build of the .NET framework. You can pin your application to a particular version. While she can have her own, not only her own version of the .NET framework, her own Roslyn compiler that she built herself with a specific feature that she wanted. She could come up with a new C# designed language feature. Have her own private branch of Roslyn, which is itself a NuGet package. The compiler is a NuGet package that then gets distributed privately with your own app, and that is running alone, and it can't hurt the machine. And the uninstall process is delete the folder. That's the goal. That's what a rare build could give you, and that's what we're trying to do. That's the goal. Now, it turns out that there is a kind of a way to cook meat that's less than rare. Did you know about this? It's called blue. You can order blue meat. They basically just slap the cow in the butt and send it out. Like a good doctor could bring the steak back. They bring the meat out and they go, clear! That would be third-party forks building the entirety of the stack from all the way up. You can totally do that if you want to. And I'm gonna show you an example where someone has done just that. But you're on your own at that point, right? If you call us for support, you're gonna be less likely, which gets me to the point about support. People are afraid of this. You don't like this? Consciously choose as a company to ignore the pieces that you don't care about. Most people will be medium well and well done, and that's totally fine. If you call support, and it is software that's shipped in Visual Studio, we will support you. That means jQuery, Modernizer, open source software that's included inside of ASP.NET. If you're running it on Linux and you got it in Visual Studio and you deployed it to Linux or you did it with Visual Studio code, we will support you. This is supported. So if you send a pull request to me and you sign the forms and we take your code, we're going to run it through the exact same process that any other Microsoft engineer's code gets run through, all the same geographic checks, security checks. The code is identical, and it is equally supported. So we're seeing like 20% of our contributions from the community, which is great. We're seeing improvements in things like Kestrel, which is our open source web server, which has got, you know, 400% perf based on external contributions. And we're running it through the process as if it came from an internal employee. This is really important. Well done means well done. So when you use, you know, jQuery or some open source library, what you are using is the Microsoft licensed to you version of that open source library. You shouldn't even have to think, oh, should we use open source? Will it be supported? It will absolutely be supported because Microsoft's going to support it. Just like there are those who run Google Chrome, right? But then there's Chromium, which is the open source project of which Google Chrome is a Chrome licensed instance of Chromium. Does that make sense? There's the open source software that is Roslyn compiler, and then there's the Microsoft C# and VB compiler that is shipped with Visual Studio. The Microsoft, you know, licensed, copyrighted, branded, supported version of that. So it's a really, really important thing to remember if you're thinking about open source. And when we talk about choice in these contexts, we are really serious. So who's familiar with OmniSharp? OmniSharp.net. So what this is it's externalized IntelliSense for any text editor. When you type something in Sublime, you can type like, hey, something complicated, and then you go and type hey, Sublime will say, oh, I know this. You typed hey, something complicated before, I'm gonna auto-complete that. It's not intelligent, it's cool, it's clever, but it's not IntelliSense. It's, I typed it before. That's no disrespect to Sublime, it's just not IntelliSense. IntelliSense is actually compiling and running the code at runtime in memory as you are typing, and then introspecting on that code. So if I said var I equals Scott, var is of type string, and then I type I dot, I'm gonna get an IntelliSense dropdown with the properties of strings. If I changed it to an integer, I'm gonna expect to immediately, without saving, without compiling, to get integer things. That has always been magic. And by magic, I mean like sparkle fingers, magic. You have to have Visual Studio. It's part of the internal black box that is the magic of Visual Studio. There's an open source project called OmniSharp that went and externalized all of that into an out of process thing and then put a web service head on it. So you can actually make autocomplete IntelliSense calls over a tiny local web service. So I could be in Notepad. And if I could hook into Notepad, I could be doing that. So they went and they hooked into Brackets and Atom and Emacs and Sublime and Vim and made all of that happen. So then as you're typing, the work of the IntelliSense doesn't happen inside of the editor, it happens externally. And as you type, it's making these little tiny calls. It started originally as web services, and now I think it happens over pipes. So if I go and run Visual Studio. Oh, and then someone yelled out, how do they get their Visual Studio code to turn green instead of purple or blue? This is the insider's build. You can go up to code.visualstudio.com/download, and there's an insider's build. There's stable. Visual Studio code just went 1.0, by the way. And this will not hurt your machine, by the way. Or you can click on insiders. So I have two builds of code. I've got the green one, and then I've got the blue one. So this will give you monthly releases. This is, again, that idea of how much risk do you want to assume in your life, but also an ongoing commitment to doing things side by side. For example, if you install Visual Studio 15 next to 2015, the preview edition doesn't hurt the existing one. You're not going to mess up your machine. So in here, if I start typing, I'm getting IntelliSense immediately with, really nice IntelliSense with like help and number of overloads, and all that stuff. Isn't that cool? This is inside of a code editor, not inside of Visual Studio proper. Now you see this little fire down here? That little flame? That flame is the OmniSharp logo for the OmniSharp project, which is an open source project that's not us, not Microsoft. But the team is working on it. So Visual Studio Code is consuming OmniSharp. So if there's an editor that you'd rather use that's not Visual Studio, you could totally do that. Now, this is what's so amazing to me, and I feel like Microsoft doesn't really get enough respect for this, is that a couple, 5 years ago, this was unthinkable. So what's Microsoft's game, right? There must be some evil plan, right? There always is an evil plan, right? So I've been at Microsoft now, surprisingly, 8 years. Seems like five. I have never been in a meeting yet, although I may be in the wrong meetings, where anyone has actually gone, there's been moments where someone like went for it but then stopped, but there has never actually been a moment. So it's almost like we're a bunch of stormtroopers that are just running around this big old empty Death Star, just trying not to push a button that accidentally kills, like, you know, blows up Alderaan. It's effectively what's happening. It's a perfect analogy of exactly what's going on at Microsoft right now. What's this button do? Oh, I just destroyed an industry. We're legitimately trying to do the right thing. So what's the trick? This is my opinion. So if you're a press person or whatever, and the press people love to do this, they love to go and say, Microsoft Principal Program Manager, as if principal, which is our rank, implies there's one. Right? There's like 10,000 of us. We are literally like stormtroopers. Like, you just, and we can't aim at anything. Everybody's a program manager at Microsoft. Doesn't even matter. My dad thinks I'm cool because I'm a manager, but I don't manage anything. Microsoft Principal Program Manager Hanselman says, no, it's all crap. So if you're a press person, just remember that everything I say is my opinion and it's all crap. What's Microsoft's game? We're in the for loop business now. We're trying to sell for loops. We don't care where they run, right? I've got an iPhone. It's got Word and Excel. And I've got an iPad that has Excel on it and Skype for Business. Do you know that you can write add-ins now for Excel on the iPad in JavaScript? Like, I'm totally serious. Like, that's an actual thing now. And I was like, why did you do that? Why would you do that? And they're like, well, customers wanted that. That's so cool. You're like making what we want you to make. How cool. They don't care. They want your for loop, right? It doesn't matter if your for loop happens to be running Objective-C or on an iPad, right? Azure, 23%, 24% of Azure is Linux. Because it's a for loop, right? It's all running on Windows anyway. You know, it's Hyper-V, right? So it's all ultimately doing that, right? If you want to run Node apps, like, we spent so much energy and so much time trying to tell people how to do stuff. I want us to spend more time telling people that you can do stuff. Does that make sense? Let me try this. Switchy guy? You're switchy guy now. Switch me over to 3. I'm trying to... Over to 3. I was trying to flip it off. I didn't understand my fingerprint. Bless you. All right, so this is a separate machine here. Did you all hear about this? Did anyone not hear about this? I want to know if there's an actual genuine reaction from someone who just heard this now. Did you just hear this now? Anyone wants to admit to that? You just heard this moment. Where have you been for like the last 3 months? This is the biggest thing since God talked to Moses. Too much? It's big though, it's big. So you can run Bash on Windows. One of the confusing things about it though is it's Bash on Ubuntu on Windows. And that's a little bit confusing because it's not clear, like, well, what exactly is going on there? Like, how is this not, you know, Cygwin or whatever? And then it's Ubuntu. So what does that mean? By the way, it is pronounced Ubuntu. Get it right. Don't say Ubuntu. It's not pronounced that way. It's like saying Microsoft. All right, you may say that in Spain, but you don't say that here. So I was arguing with David Fowler, who's trying to tell me how to pronounce stuff, and he's from Barbados, and I was saying, it's pronounced Ubuntu. And he said, no, it's not. And I was like, yeah, it is. It's Ubuntu. My wife is a Zulu. I speak the Zulu Ubuntu. He's like, no, I don't believe it. So I got a video of Nelson Mandela explaining what Ubuntu means. Ubuntu, Ubuntu, you know, explaining the whole thing. And then he's like, I don't believe it. It's been dubbed. I was like, you're killing me, David. I was literally backstage at Build telling one of the execs, Ubuntu, Ubuntu. We actually put B-O-O on the teleprompter to make sure they got it right. All right, so here's Ubuntu. And notice how fast it started. I want to do that again. That is real. And if I go to CD MNT, C drive, that's my C drive, right? What that's doing is kernel calls into the Linux kernel are actually being redirected to the Windows kernel. That's it. Now, I'm going to say that's it. Like, a lot of people worked really hard for many, many years to make that work. But this is what you all do, by the way. When we do amazing stuff, you go, oh, well, that's just, oh, God. Nerds love to say, well, actually, and well, that's just. And then they just, you know, abstract all the hard work of thousands of people on top of something. So this is Ubuntu in that these are the real binaries downloaded from the Windows Store provided to us by Ubuntu. So I can actually go and say apt-get update, and those are coming from Ubuntu.com, okay? So why does this have anything to do with an open source talk that I would do on ASP.NET? Let's find out. People want what they want, right? People want an out-of-process memory server, a memory database. So maybe I'm gonna go here and say apt-get install Redis server. So here I'm getting Redis and installing it, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And on this machine here, this has got a newer version of a Windows that's coming soon. Invalid argument. Try this again. This is a daily build from, I don't know, some days ago. Well, that's suboptimal. Invalid argument. You're just making me sad. It's talking to my phone, too. Let me try this. That usually means it didn't get an IP address. You know that the definition of insanity is trying something multiple times and expecting a different result? I can't remember. Who knows Redis? No? So there's not, so it's on, it's running. What's that? Info. Cool, so it is running. All right, cool, shiny, it worked. So I've got Redis running then on this machine. How do I make it stop? How do I kill it, Linux person who just yelled out info? Thanks for that. So you know something, but not that thing. What I wanted to do, I think what happened is it started, it starts as a result of me installing it. What I want to be able to do is I want to start it in interactive mode and like see the Redis logo. So I'll show you that real quick. So I want to be able to run whatever tools I want to run. When you right now go around the internets and you show up at a page with a cool new tool that you're super excited about using, and then you see the instructions about how to get it working at the command line, and you see a dollar sign, and then some instructions. What does that usually mean? Not for me. Right, that's how I take that. I just take it as like, oh, they don't care about me. They don't want me to use their tool. And that makes me sad. This means that those tools are available to us as web developers. We can do whatever we want to do. That's what I wanted to see. So that is 64-bit Redis directly apt-getting from the interweb. And then I could go into Visual Studio and look at ASP.NET and talk to it. I could go in and I'll run an ASP.NET application that then talks to Redis. So I can go over here and it's listening. And I'll go and run my application. Oh, and while I'm doing that, by the way, in Windows 10, you know, you can hit Alt Enter, and it makes your command line full screen. Yeah, didn't know that. That's up there with sourceof.net, isn't it? You like that? You know, did you know you can go Window Tab and open a second virtual desktop? You know that? No? Did you know that you could pick this up and go swoop? And throw this into the Angular desktop? You know that? And did you know that you could then put that on its own window, full screen, on the other desktop? And then on this version of Windows, on my Surface, I'm going to do this in the... So this means four-finger swipes coming to Windows for precision touchpads, which means that with the addition of Linux, ELF binaries, that puts us where Linux was 20 years ago. And with the new four-finger swipe, we are now where Macs were 10 years ago, which means if Microsoft sees your taillights, we're coming for you. It's a true story. Gonna get you. So anyway, I can go and now run this ASP.NET app and talk to Redis. And why is that interesting? I didn't need a VM. I could use apt-get. I can get the tools that I want. I can run them on however I want to. And then if I wanted to go and send this up to Azure, which offers, coincidentally, a Redis as a service, then you have a very, very natural workflow. I can mix and match the tools that make me happy. So that's pretty hot, and I like that, and it makes me smile. All right, let's switch over to number one. And here's actually, this is not web related, but I think it's an interesting demo in that it gets you thinking about what's happening inside of Microsoft right now. So I've always been a web person. I'm kind of hardcore web. I believe the web is going to win. Bet on the web, all that kind of stuff. But, I've shown you all things in the past like Browser Link and F12 tools and cool things like that. And I wondered sometimes if other teams see, you know, the cool stuff that the web's doing, right? And UWP, right, is the Universal Windows Applications. UWP apparently added a new feature in Visual Studio in Update 2 that I did not know about. And it made me think of you all. So I'm going to run this little UWP app here. And while I'm doing that, some new stuff will pop up here. Do-do-do-do-do. Compiling. Okay, running the app. By the way, you see these diagnostic tools over here? This is new in Visual Studio Update 1, I think. Check this out. This is kind of cool. Shows like memory and process data and CPU, happens automatically. You guys seen this? Fantastic stuff. So check this out. Look at this. Is that new? This is a UWP app. This is not a web app. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. Where have you seen that before? XAML, in my experience, has been kind of hard. because I want to understand that grid, that explorer of all of the different controls and how they talk. I can go and click on one of these controls, and look what's happening on the left. It's showing me the explorer grid, right? So then, check this out. I can click on one of those, and they will actually take me directly to that line. Now, this is a small screen here, so imagine this on 19 monitors that are all 4K, and it'll be fine. But that is the line and then the text size. So in the next version of Visual Studio, you're going to be able to actually, while the app is running, edit those values side by side with the app and develop those. That's us. That's the web people influencing the world. That's cool stuff that's happening. That's F12 tools, except it's in XAML. It's happening live in a native application. And that, when I saw that, that made me think of how the web is influencing people and how we're starting to make some pretty cool strides, even though it's not necessarily web stuff directly. Oh, and then, by the way, over here in this version, this is Visual Studio Code. How many people use Visual Studio Code? You really should check it out. Code.visualstudio.com. It is written in JavaScript. Did you know that? It's written in TypeScript, in fact, a couple hundred thousand lines of TypeScript. You can prove it by doing that, because it's super weird. I'm just hitting Control plus and minus. Isn't that weird? You can even hit, you can even go like this. Yeah, I was like, what? That's crazy. So because it's an Electron app, that's what makes it work cross-platform, right? But we're still talking to C#. So when you download this and open a C# application, it's going to say, hey, you don't have C#. Do you need that stuff? And it'll download those things. And it'll bring the .NET Core debugger down as a NuGet. So remember earlier we were talking about these kids that are going to learn on .NET. What do they learn today, right? They go apt, get, install, Go, Ruby, Python, PHP. No, we don't teach them PHP because we love the children. basically everything but .NET. I want them to be able to go and say apt install .NET. Then come out to the command line because we want to get them to feel good about themselves as quickly as possible. And type something like .NET, .NET new, right? .NET restore, unable, that's comforting. That'll probably work. This is going badly. Fortunately. Oh, where's Scott Hunter when you need him? I don't even know what that means. Info? We think is you just type info again. What, you think it's gonna save me? Thanks. Thanks, buddy. That was super helpful. Appreciate that. My SDK is not installed? Yeah, it is. All right, switch over to this other machine. Let's watch this fail on a Surface. Send me over to 3, switchy guy. Thank you. Well, crap. Well, that's not good. What's going on here, kids? Am I doing it wrong? This may be the worst demo I've ever done. Oh, I have internet. It's on my phone. Oh, not connected. That's Bluetooth. My phone, I don't know, man. That makes me sad. I have no idea what's going on there. I've got a daily build of this, and I installed it on the airplane. I'm starting to think that was a bad idea. Could just randomly delete one of these. That'll probably work. Nothing bad could happen from that. I'm glad that I am freaking out is actually in their history now. So we know that this happened. Yeah, exactly. So what I would need to do would be to pin this. I've got a daily build. Yeah, see, unable to resolve. Am I on the internet on this machine? Oh, conference Wi-Fi. Okay, internet's fine. Not found. NetCore app. You know what I think I have? I have .NET, but I don't have all of the private NuGet package thing. So I can't get the good stuff. And I'm not going to try to fix that now. But let's pretend that worked really great. So clap. We'll fix it in post-production. So here's the idea. And in all seriousness, that is literally installed on an airplane. And just to put a really fine point on it, I was in 9F holding the phone that I was tethered on as we were taking off. I was installing and trying to restore while I'm holding the phone trying to get a signal, and I've tethered my phone. So it's very possible that something is sick on this machine. Okay, so these kids are going to go, and they're going to say .NET new. Oh, switch me over to one, switchy. Thank you. They're going to type .NET restore to get the bits that they need, right? And then .NET run. And that's it. That is the idea. Then you're going to grow up from there. Hello world at the command line, hello world on the web, then MVC, web APIs, and things like that. You go and grab Visual Studio Code, or JetBrains Writer, or Visual Studio Proper, which will install quickly, and have a good experience. In something like Visual Studio Code, given that nothing works, let's undelete that one thing, because that probably... Oh, that's good. So then we were at this talk, and Hanselman dug .NET out of the trash because he screwed up his machine. And at this point, we'd lost all confidence that this was going to go well for him. But we somehow continued to watch. Let's see if this actually works. So I'm in .NET Visual Studio Code running this app, and if I'm lucky, breakpoint. So now we're in, there it is, cool. Good thing I kept the recycle bin open and I could undelete .NET. Yeah, that's really kind of a bummer. I don't know why that didn't work. But at this point, I can step over. I'm testing fade at this point. I can see watches all inside of an environment that's easy and quick to download, right? So the kids will be able to do that and then hopefully grow up into the kind of soulless automatons that you all are. Woo! Thanks, Microsoft. Let's that was my Mickey Mouse, apparently. So, one thing that you could potentially do is, since the entire stack is open source, and I thought it would be kind of cool, is I had Powell from our team take all the source code for the .NET framework and compile it for the Raspberry Pi. So this is a Raspberry Pi that's running an ARM version of Windows, right? So it's running Windows 10 IoT Core and running a lovely 3D printed case. Sitting right there. And I should be able to, from this machine, PowerShell into it. Now, Pavel is Polish, so his password is mostly C's and Z's, and it's about 50 characters long. There are literally 16 Z's in this password. Okay, that did not work. Z, 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 S, Z, 4. Totally serious. So this is on Windows right now, and I'm going enter PS session, which is like SSH for PowerShell, over to that machine, which is on the corporate Wi-Fi, the conference Wi-Fi. So don't mess that up for me. I'm trying to attack it or something. And the very first time, it's got to log into Windows, so it takes a second. Plus, this is just a Raspberry Pi 2, which is the basic version. And can you switch over to 2 for me real quick while that's logging in? There's the Raspberry Pi, just to prove it's real. That's all it shows you. You can run UWP apps there if you want to. So you can see the IP address. So switch back for me to 1. So you see the IP address on the left there? So now I'm on the Raspberry Pi. And should be able to run this Hello ASP.NET app. Remember how to do it. Okay, let's see if this works. So he's got a private build of ASP.NET and the .NET Core and the Roslyn, and the entire stack has been compiled for ARM. Now, we don't have an ARM build yet. This is not official, but it shows that it can be done if you simply feel like doing it. So let's go see if that works. 172.17.59.218 port 5000. 59, did I get it right? 218? 5005, like I said. 5005. Hey, it worked. And it should actually say core. That was scary. Cool. So that gets you thinking about what you could potentially do with that, right? And it also reminds me that as a .NET developer that I can really do anything. Xamarin's free. I can write apps for iPhone, and I have. I have a little startup that I'll share with you in a second. I can write Azure applications. I can do big stuff in the cloud. I can do big data. I can do tiny things. Now, I could go and learn lots of different languages, but I really like C#, and I really like .NET, and it makes me happy, so I like to do those things as much as I can in the language that makes me happy. For example, my little startup, and actually in the interest of breaking demos and making and doing things that probably won't work. I guess I'll just risk it. This is a little thing that I'm working on that is written in ASP.NET, hosted in Azure, has servers all over the world, runs on the iPhone, and happens to be written entirely in .NET, the entire stack. So I really like Siri. I think Siri's super cool, with all due respect to Cortana. And I dictate to Siri a lot, and I'll say, remind me to get milk and things like that. And I want to be able to dictate into Windows. So I worked with my friend Greg, and we wrote an application here. And this is the only legitimate reason to ever use a QR code. I'm just going to point my phone at it. And if you look there, it says, Scott's iPhone just joined. And basically, I can just talk to my iPhone like this, and it will automatically be sent into the cloud, period. It's hashtag awesome. So then I can run a WPF app that we wrote in C# that runs in the tray and automatically takes the text from the cloud and pastes it into whatever window is in front. So then I can go and dictate all my emails into Outlook. Now you might say, oh, Dragon Naturally Speaking or whatever, but this is $2 and it took us not too long to write. We did the entire thing in C# from the WPF app to the Azure stuff, ASP.NET, SignalR, And then when I needed it to work overseas, I just spun up other instances. I was in Japan, I wanted it to work over there, switched my phone into Japanese, spun up a system for Japan, started running it over there, and it just worked. So if I hit hub.myechoapp.com, I'm getting the North Central US stuff. And if I hit Europe, I'd hit Europe. So all of this stuff becomes possible when things start coming together, when the Lego pieces that I like to talk about plug in nicely. This is a startup. We've done over a million words dictated, and it's just two people. And I say that as a, like, isn't that amazing? Because .NET works, the web works, HTTP works, WebSockets work, C# works, the cloud works. I mean, think about all the stuff that has to happen for me to have a global system that is designed like this. I'm not even on the same Wi-Fi. I'm doing this over LTE. Well, that's on a separate network. For me to traverse the networks, have Siri be able to be used in this way, and do it all on top of an open web framework on the cloud that I wanted to. Now, I used the example of Azure, but I didn't necessarily have to use Azure. If you go to whereyouat.trafficmanager.net, at build, I went and did a little demo of this where I put together, with some help of my team, a website that was running on Azure, Amazon, Google Cloud, Docker, Docker's own cloud, and had ASP.NET running in all those places. Then we used Traffic Manager, which is Azure's front end for routing traffic, and we routed traffic randomly all over the world and grabbed your location down to the city and dropped a pin depending on which cloud you were on. I tweeted it, and I thought we'd get a couple of thousand. We ended up with 101,000 results, and it looks like this. The map crashed after we get more than 20,000 pins on the map. Each one of those pins is a different cloud. So the orange ones are Amazon. The little Docker ones are the little submarines. We had to take Google out. It didn't work for us, but it could totally do that. I don't know who that is, if that was a cruise ship, or maybe someone at 00 who's just trying to mess with me. This is maybe Ile de Sol off the coast there. I don't know what's going on off the coast. But that was real, and it was an instance of ASP.NET Core 1.0 running wherever. So I got to pick not only my framework, my editor, my languages, my libraries, but my cloud. So what's Microsoft trying to do? They're trying to compete on a level playing field. They want you to be at Azure. They want you to run ASP.NET. But if you don't, that's cool. It's going to work the same anyway. You can run this ASP.NET on Red Hat, on the Docker Swarm, in Kubernetes, on a Raspberry Pi. Even on the Raspberry Pi, I've got another Raspberry Pi that's running Linux that runs ASP.NET on the Raspberry Pi. This one just happens to be running Windows 10. So the choices are many, and that makes me very happy. So I'm sorry that one demo didn't work. That was a little bit sad. But we're going to pretend that never happened. And I'm going to go figure out what's going on. And I would encourage you all to check out one other thing for me, which is live.asp.net, the community stand-up. We try to do this every week. We alternate it between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. to try to hit all the time zones. And this stand-up has all sorts of cool people come on, mostly Damien, and talk to the group. And we answer your questions live. It's a live Google Hangout, but every single one of them is posted. And then one last, because I've got a keynote and I can do whatever I want to, I want to just plug my podcast. I am inordinately proud of this show, and I would encourage you, if you like NPR style shows, to check it out. It's kind of like Fresh Air. It's got all sorts of cool people from all over the place talking about all sorts of cool stuff. If you listen to it before and you stop listening, I would encourage you to check it out. It's got guests and people and topics that you absolutely will not hear anywhere else. And this goes on and on and on. I'm only in the 400s now. I've been doing this for over 10 years. And I cannot tell you how happy I am with the lovely faces of people that, there's me, that go by here on the show. So please do subscribe to that. And thank you so much for listening to me today, and have a great conference.